Do you like chocolate? Who doesn't? But how much do you really know about this magical substance? Rowan Jacobson goes deep in the new book, Wild Chocolate, Across the Americas in Search of Cacao's Soul. Rowan is the author of 8 books, including the James Beard Award-winning A Geography of Oysters and 2021's Truffle Hound. He's written for the New York Times, Harper's, Outside, Food & Wine, Forbes, and many other publications. And he appears regularly in Best American Science and Nature Writing and Best Food Writing. Here he is to share his big ideas.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rowan Jacobson, food writer, explorer, and author of the new book, Wild Chocolate. Over the past few years, I've been journeying to the Amazon and Central America, chasing chocolate back to its sacred cultural roots. And along the way, I've come to think of chocolate completely differently than I used to. Here are 5 of the big insights that have changed my thinking. Insight number 1. Chocolate comes from a fruit. That may not sound like much of an insight, but once you wrap your head around that fact, everything else falls into place. Chocolate is made from the seeds of the cacao tree, which is native to the Amazon rainforest. The seeds are about the size of almonds, and they come in pods that look kind of like Nerf footballs. They can be red, yellow, green, purple, and they're kind of fun to throw. I actually have this funny theory that kids have been throwing cacao pods at each other for probably 10,000 years, and that's partly what helped the tree to spread all over the American tropics. Anyway, to make chocolate, you take the seeds out of the pods, roast them, and grind them into a paste. That's it. That's chocolate in its purest form. And that's the form that the ancient Maya and other peoples of Latin America used for thousands of years. They always drank their chocolate, unsweetened, mixing it with water and maybe some chilies or other spices. And they worshiped the trees it came from. It wasn't an after-dinner treat. It was the soul of the rainforest in a cup. It was a totally different relationship with chocolate than what we have. Except, deep down, I think we still get some of those same vibes from chocolate that the ancient Maya got. Which leads me to insight number 2. Chocolate has superpowers. It really does. I can think of at least 3 superpowers that make chocolate a very special food. The first, of course, is flavor. No surprise, right? We all love chocolate for its flavor. But sometimes, I think we take it for granted. Chocolate is bitter, sweet, fruity, nutty, and savory, all at once. It's like an encyclopedia of flavor. But honestly, all that flavor would be no big deal without chocolate's second superpower, cocoa butter. Cacao seeds are the only source of this magical fat, which gives chocolate its richness and also its plasticity. Cocoa butter is solid at room temperature, but warm it up to body temperature and it melts beautifully. That's not so good when it happens in the seat of your car, but it's really good when it happens in your mouth. And that gives drinking chocolate a luscious thickness, and it also allows chocolatiers to transform it into all sorts of shapes with all sorts of goodies inside. So, when you eat chocolates, you're getting both a form and a flavor that no other food can quite match. But you're also getting chocolate's third and most important power. It makes you feel good. Chocolate is a really good drug. It's got a little caffeine to put an extra kick in your stride, but it's also got its very own caffeine cousin called theobromine. It's got some cannabinoids, some amphetamines, and some other really fun neurotransmitters. It makes you feel good. It makes you fall in love with the world all over again, every time. Insight number 3. Bad chocolate is really bad. Okay, I admit, growing up, I did not fall in love with the world every time I ate chocolate. I didn't even really like the stuff that much. And that's because I was eating some pretty crappy chocolate. The mainstream chocolate you find in the candy aisle doesn't even have much cacao in it. It's mostly just sugar and vanilla and cheap fillers. And this gets to the heart of what went wrong with chocolate. It became industrial. After Europeans were introduced to the drink by Mesoamericans in the 1500s, it became a huge hit in Europe, and eventually, all over the globe. As demand exploded, the forest gardens of the Americas couldn't keep up. So new cacao farms were started in Africa, and the industry kept expanding. But they didn't plant the mind-blowing heirloom varieties that were prized in Latin America. They chose high-yield, low-flavor varieties known as bulk beans. Today, Africa produces about 70% of the world's cacao, and it's almost entirely bulk beans. The industry doesn't care about the poor flavor, Because like I said, most chocolate products have so much sugar and vanilla in them that no one even notices the cacao. But they also sell for a very low price, and that's where the big problem arises. Millions of cacao farmers in Africa make about a dollar a day for full-time work. Sometimes children work for no pay at all. This enforced poverty is how the international chocolate industry is able to keep its candy so cheap. But it comes at a huge social and environmental cost to Africa. There's a better way. Insight number four, good chocolate is hard. Back in the 2000s, much, much better chocolate began appearing on American shelves. It had higher percentages of cacao, with just enough sugar to balance the bitter, and it had flavors I'd never encountered before. And it was all coming from the American tropics. A new generation of bean-to-bar artisans had arrived, and they were willing to pay the higher prices required to get the heirloom varieties they needed to create their masterpieces, especially if that cacao was supporting local economies and sustainable forest management. One of the most mind-blowing bars I tried was called Cru Sauvage, and it was being made entirely from cacao that a German explorer was sourcing in Bolivia, of all places. He claimed it was completely wild cacao, growing deep in the rainforest. Most experts didn't believe him. Cacao came from farms in Africa. Wild cacao? Long gone. So I called the guy. He said, come see for yourself. He was about to go upriver on a new expedition. So of course, I did. I flew to Bolivia, and the two of us hired a small plane to drop us in the zone. Everything was flooded, including the landing strips in the jungle, which are all made by narco traffickers transporting cocaine. And sure enough, we finally made a sketchy landing on an overgrown runway, and immediately, four guys with guns come out of the nearby cabin and ask us what we're up to. We had to use half our money for the trip to pay them off, and then they let us go. But that was just the beginning of the craziness. As we headed downriver in our canoe, we found flooded forests of beautiful cacao. We could pilot our boat right up underneath the trees. There were local people harvesting it, and we made a deal to buy it from them. It made some of the most beautiful and wild-tasting chocolate I've ever had. But in the following years, the whole operation went bankrupt. There were just too many floods, too many bugs, too much drugs, and too many ways for money to disappear into a lawless jungle. My German friend walked away, broke, then came back, obsessed with making the perfect bar. And I realized it's the same all over the neotropics where the best heirloom cacao grows. Getting your hands on that cacao and getting it out of the jungle in good condition is almost impossible. You have to be an artist and a dreamer. Fortunately, chocolate attracts exactly these people. And because of that, we're in a golden age of chocolate right now, with new long-lost varieties of cacao being discovered every year. There's never been a better time to be a chocoholic. Insight number five, chocolate should be sacred. I'll never forget the time I visited the Oaxaca Valley of Mexico and helped a woman named Karina Santiago make her special chocolate drink. The recipe goes back in Karina's family for centuries, and it's a labor of love. You have to toast each of the ingredients on a clay griddle over a wood fire. Corn, cacao, wheat, cinnamon. Then you kneel in front of a stone table known as a metate and grind the ingredients into a paste. Then you put the paste in a gourd, add hot water, a little honey, and whip the drink into a froth, spitting a wooden stick between your hands until it has a huge head of foam on top. Only then is it ready to serve. That's how the ancient Maya did it too. They cared as much about the perfect foam as any barista does today. The result is amazing, of course, like drinking a chocolatey cloud. But the process takes hours. Why go to so much trouble? And the answer is because chocolate is ritual, and it always has been. 500 years ago, when somebody made you a cup of chocolate, they were taking the energy of the rainforest and transforming it with their own labor into a liquid work of art. And as you took in all those flavors, all those neurotransmitters, you got to focus your mind on the joys of being alive in a world with such amazing energies. That's still the case. Today, cacao ceremonies are being rediscovered. Chocolate is being returned to its sacred roots. But it's not doing it alone, of course. I wrote my book to capture the stories of the farmers, activists, and entrepreneurs who are making this happen, sometimes at great personal risk. Theirs is an amazing tale, and it was my great privilege to get the chance to tell it. Thanks for listening, and please check out the book for the full scoop.
Thank you, Rowan. That was five big ideas from Wild Chocolate, a Across the Americas in Search of Cacao's Soul by Rowan Jacobson. I'm Michael Kofnat. Have a great day.